Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Punitive Damages, Seaworthiness, and the Jones Act Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On March 25th, 2019, the Supreme Court heard argument in the Dutcher Group versus Batterton, a case considering whether punitive damages may be awarded in a general maritime action for unseaworthiness. Christopher Batterton was a deckhand on a ship owned by the Dutcher Group. In the course of Batterton's work, a hatch cover that covered a compartment storing pressurized air blew open and crushed Batterton's left hand. The hatch cover allegedly blew because of the ship's lack of a mechanism for exhausting overpressurized air. Batterton was permanently disabled because of the injury. He brought suit against Dutcher Group and Federal District Court in California, seeking, among other things, punitive damages for unseaworthiness. Dutcher Group moved to dismiss the claim for punitive damages, arguing that although the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit had allowed such damages in its 1987 decision, Evich v. Morris, that precedent had been implicitly overruled by the Supreme Court's 1990 decision in Miles v. Apex Marine Corps, which held that the parent of a deceased seaman could not recover loss of society damages in a general maritime action. The District Court denied the motion, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed, concluding that punitive damages differed materially from loss of society damages, and that, under the Jones Act, Evich remained good law. Punitive damages are awardable to seamen for their own injuries in general maritime unseaworthiness actions. That ruling, however, put the Ninth Circuit in direct conflict with a contrary ruling by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit on the same issue, and the Supreme Court subsequently granted certiorari to address whether punitive damages may be awarded to a Jones Act seaman in a personal injury suit alleging a breach of the general maritime duty to provide a seaworthy vessel. And now, to discuss the case, we have Daryl Josfer, Senior Vice President and Chief Counsel for Appellate Litigation at the U.S. Chamber Litigation Center.
The question is whether punitive damages may ever be awarded for violations of the common law duty of seaworthiness. Now, that may sound a little obscure, but even for those of you with little interest in admiralty law, this case raises interesting issues about the relationship between federal common law and federal statutes, and the extent to which judges should follow congressional policies as they develop federal common law. Now, by way of a quick disclaimer, the Chamber Litigation Center has supported the petitioner Dutcher Group in this case. So if I have any bias in this presentation, it will run in that direction, but I think I'll be giving you a straight-up explanation of where matters stand. Now, Seth Waxman argued the case for petitioner of the Dutcher Group, which had been found liable for unseaworthiness due to a defective hatch on one of its ships. Dutcher's basic argument is that the Jones Act does not permit punitive damages, so the common law duty of seaworthiness should not either. And Mr. Waxman relied heavily on the Supreme Court's decision in Miles against Apex Marine Corporation, which had held that the scope of permissible compensatory damages for unseaworthiness should not exceed the damages available under the Jones Act, because judges expounding on the common law should respect Congress's policy choices. Justice Sotomayor then jumped in to say, well, the Jones Act says that it supplements common law, so how can it take remedies away? Mr. Waxman's response was that the Jones Act and this particular duty at issue here, the common law duty of unseaworthiness, provide alternative causes of action for the exact same injury. And in that circumstance, common law courts should respect Congress's choice of remedies. Justice Kagan then jumped in, though, to say, well, where would that lead us? Because the unseaworthiness cause of action today has evolved quite a bit since the Jones Act. It now provides a much broader remedy for many more sailors than it ever had before. And she says, so if the Jones Act took over the field, as you suggested, Mr. Waxman, how is it possible this cause of action could have changed so much? Her basic point being, when does the Jones Act allow courts to continue developing the common law, and when does it tell them to stop? Mr. Waxman's answer was to quote directly from Miles itself, when he said that, quote, in this era, Miles was a relatively modern decision, an admiralty court should look primarily to these legislative enactments for policy guidance. We may supplement these statutory remedies where doing so would achieve the uniform vindication of such policies, consistent with our constitutional mandate, but we must also keep strictly within the limits imposed by Congress. Mr. Waxman was then questioned about Atlantic Sounding Company against Townsend, which is the other crucial Supreme Court decision in this case, that held by a 5-4 vote with Justice Thomas writing that punitive damages are available for breaches of a different maritime duty, which is called the duty of maintenance and cure. Now, that duty, which traces back to the 13th century, requires the operator of a ship to care for injured sailors for the length of the voyage, regardless of the nature or cause of the injury. The basic point is that if I'm injured at sea for any reason, I can't get off the ship to fend for myself, so I'm entitled to medical care, food, and pay until the voyage ends. Now, Mr. Waxman distinguished Townsend, which again allowed punitive damages, on two main grounds. He said that first, while seaworthiness and the Jones Act cover the same injury, maintenance and cure is different as it imposes strict liability during the voyage and only during the voyage. And second, he argued that although punitive damages were awarded at common law for breach of the duty of maintenance and cure, they were never awarded in traditional common law for unseaworthiness, which the second of those being an especially key point. So Justice Kagan picked up by asking whether the reason the punitive damages had not been awarded at common law for unseaworthiness is just that it didn't come up, because who would take deliberate actions to sink their own ships, as she asked. That touched off an interesting series of questions by Justice Alito, who responded that, well, the owner would normally not be on the ship, so the owner could do a cost-benefit analysis that making the ship safer wasn't worth the cost. And Justice Alito then asked how that cost-benefit analysis generally would have come out in the 19th century, to which Mr. Waxman responded that he had not been alive back then. Turning then to the argument for the respondent, Christopher Batterton, that was done by David Frederick, and he had a rough reception. Although Townsend is undoubtedly supportive of their position, and he started off with Townsend, Justice Sotomayor immediately pointed out that although punitive damages have been awarded in common law for maintenance and cure, it's not clear they were ever awarded for unseaworthiness, which is what's at issue here. Justice Ginsburg then jumped in again and got David Frederick to acknowledge that evidence of punitives ever being awarded at common law for seaworthiness was, quote, slim, in her words. But Mr. Frederick responded that under Townsend, the dispositive point was that punitive damages had generally been available in maritime actions, generally speaking, before the Jones Act, and it didn't matter whether there was evidence that they'd ever been awarded for any particular type of maritime claim. The Chief Justice then suggested, though, that violations of the duty of maintenance and cure are probably far more egregious than seaworthiness in general, because an injured sailor can't fend for himself not being cared for sounds far more egregious than what the Chief thought a typical seaworthiness case would entail, such as, you know, a broken hatch like this one. To which David Frederick responded that, look, you're never going to have punitive damages in any case unless the facts of that case are in fact egregious, and when they are, punitives should be awarded for deterrent purposes. Justice Kavanaugh raised an interesting point, to me at least, when he said that there is an impressive array of amicus briefs explaining that imposing punitive damages would cause grave harm to the maritime industry. And what did Mr. Frederick think of that? And Mr. Frederick's response was that, in his view, the amicus briefs relied on theory and were unsupported. The reason that I mention that is only that the justice is asking question about amicus briefs is something that seems to be happening with much greater frequency in recent years than it had. So it seems that at least at oral argument, you know, this is just one of many recent examples of the court taking an interest in amicus briefs that I don't know that it did several years ago or even farther back than that. Now, I'll conclude with the question from Justice Alito because it's perhaps the key question. He asked, quote, "You're basically asking us to put on our common law hat and decide that punitive damages are a good thing because there isn't any case pre-Jones Act saying that you could get punitive damages for unseaworthiness." Now, the response was that, well, a couple courts had considered awarding punitives for seaworthiness, which suggests that they would have been available in the right case. But the key point about this exchange is that Justice Alito's suggested approach here would give the court a way to rule for the ship owner without having to decide whether the Jones Act permits punitives. Because recall that Dutcher's argument is that the Jones Act does not permit punitives, and therefore unseaworthiness should not either. That, of course, would require the court to consider whether the Jones Act permits punitives, which in turn would require the court to consider whether the Federal Employees Liability Act permits punitives, the reason for that being that the Jones Act incorporates the FELA's remedial scheme. And although FELA has consistently been understood since the late 19th century to preclude punitives, respondent argued rather vigorously in this case that that's wrong. And the court showed little interest in reaching that FILA question here because the only mentions of it at argument were two justices, Justice Ginsburg and Justice Sotomayor, pointing out that the court had reserved that question. Now, one way around considering FILA and continuing to reserve the question here would be for the Supreme Court to hold, as Justice Alito suggested, that even apart from the Jones Act, the common law has never sanctioned punitives for unseaworthiness, and therefore it should not now either. The other way the court could rule would be to rely broadly on Townsend. If the court were to hold the punitives are available here, the simplest approach would be to agree with Mr. Frederick's understanding of Townsend. So ultimately, it depends on how broadly one reads Miles versus how broadly one reads Townsend, and we will find out the answer in due course.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.